Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 136, Samuel's Smart Late Night Tofu Spaghetti, Sunday, September 18th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: The Front Porch and Ever Expanding Skill Set. But first, a few announcements. Fleecewise, the series begins this week. It begins on the New Hampshire Knits podcast with Claire. Claire has conducted some interviews with folks who raise sheep and shear them in preparation for the hand spinner. So she is really fabulous when it comes to conducting interviews because she's so inquisitive and curious. And she's going to kick off this four-part series. It continues with Sarah of the Fiber Trek podcast, Emily of Fibertown, and it concludes here on the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast just before Rhinebeck. This is the perfect opportunity to gather some information and get your questions answered regarding fleece, purchase, preparation, anything you want to know. Each of the four podcasters has a thread open on Ravelry for questions, but also from input for those of you who may be more experienced with fleece processing, or maybe shepherds who want to weigh in and answer some of the questions about fleece production. And there will be prizes awarded for participation on those threads. We all plan to shop together at Rhinebeck and purchase a fleece, which we will divide and work on preparing separately. So we do envision a phase two of this series where we talk about our individual plans and processes for using this fleece once we purchase it. I think it's a really exciting way to deepen your connection with the products, practices, and people who make this industry what it is. So I hope you tune in to Claire of New Hampshire Knits this week and continue listening to and watching the series as it unfolds. Something else I wanted to mention is that both Samuel and I will be participating in the 200-year celebration of a church in Stockton, New Jersey. I grew up in Hunterdon County, and my mother is still very much involved with the Kingwood United Methodist Church and has been instrumental in planning this 200-year celebration. As part of that, she has invited Bovine Social Club to perform there, and they will be doing so. It's not their usual gig because they'll be unplugged. They'll be performing a set of gospel songs and sing-alongs, and they will be in period dress. So it's a very special opportunity to see Bovine Social Club. I mention that because many of you have asked about where and when you could see Bovine Social Club perform. So here's an opportunity if you're local: October 2nd at Kingwood United Methodist Church in Stockton. And the other reason I mention that is because Samuel appears later on this audio podcast. So stay tuned for that. I will also be participating in this 200-year celebration. The specifics of my involvement are a little less defined at this point, but I believe that I will also be in period costume and I will be conducting some sort of spinning or fiber prep demonstration, perhaps in conjunction with another local spinner who is also a listener to the podcast. All of this period costuming is the property of my family because as I grew up, I don't know if I mentioned this in the podcast before, but one of the things that my family did as we were growing up is that we took part in pre-1840 style reenactments and encampments. So mom has been digging through all of those period pieces as well as jewelry and other kinds of accessories. And the whole band is going to be outfitted, and she probably has enough for the minister to wear something, and I'll certainly be wearing some of the clothes that I used to wear for these encampments. So that should be a little walk down memory lane and quite a bit of fun. I will link to more information about this in the show notes on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. If you are local and have a specific interest in attending, you can contact me and I will provide you with more up-to-date and specific information as I have it. The front porch. I have been knitting stockinette in the round in black yarn as I work on my Bressa dress. This is a Fair Isle dress designed by Gudrun Johnston, and I am knitting it in preparation for Rhinebeck. The knitting is going well. I think it's on target. My goal is to complete all of the stockinette portion of the dress by the end of October, maybe even complete the little bit of Fair Isle and bind off the bottom of the dress by the end of October. That would be the ideal target so that during the month of October, I can devote my time to making and stitching on the pockets. There's a really adorable pocket detail on this dress, and then finishing the sleeves. The sleeves on this dress are short cap sleeves, and the way that they're written and the way they look in the project photos is that they're a little bit fluttery, which I do not care for. So I plan to refrain from doing increases on the sleeve and maybe even do some decreases under the arm to close that up and get more of a fitted cap sleeve. I do think this will work nicely as a short sleeve dress. And that way I could wear a thermal tee under it or some type of jacket over it. The work on that is going well, but it's not very exciting to talk about black stockinette in the round. So I cast on a new to me sock pattern. The pattern was a gift from the designer, Emily Estrada, of the Fibertown podcast. She gave me the gift of her Collie Wobbles socks, and I have cast them on in some yarn that I purchased at the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival quite a few years ago. This is a skein from Fat Cat Knits. It's a superwash nylon blend, which is not my usual thing at all, but I think this highly variegated yarn is perfect for Emily's pattern. The colorway is called Wayfarer, but if I were naming the colorway, I think I would call it Vineyard. There is a leafy green and some beautiful deep purples and sort of like a deep wine-colored purple, and then a little bit of peach and pink and some ivory. It's very pretty. It's very autumnal. And I am conducting sock experiment number 2 with this pattern. I like to knit 2 socks on double pointed needles in tandem. So far I have figured out that much about my preferred sock knitting method. And I talked a few episodes ago about completing socks on two different brands of double-pointed needles, and I have two new brands of double-pointed needles that I'm testing out. So in addition to not usually knitting with superwash yarn, I am also very reluctant to investigate things that other people mention in podcasts or on Ravelry threads and just go and buy something at the suggestion of someone else. But I broke that rule a few weeks ago after Karen from Iowa, who is Kunstknit on Ravelry, posted in the episode thread after I recorded episode 134 about knitting needles. And I had mentioned in the podcast that she talked about these blackthorn needles and they were very intriguing to me. She posted, "They're on sale on Webs." So I looked, and these are expensive needles. They run $35 for a set of five needles, and they were on sale for $15.99. And I already knew that I was interested in knitting with them, so I bought the needles. And I bought an additional pair of needles because I thought, well, I'll just do a sock experiment. I'll test two types of needles. So I also purchased some Knitter's Pride Dreams, both in US size 0, and they have arrived. I've cast on with my usual tubular cast on, and I'm knitting 2x2 rib in the round. The blackthorn needles are incredible. I am so glad I purchased them. I wish that I had purchased two pairs. I don't know if I'll go back on and purchase another pair, but they are still on sale at Webs. $15.99 a set. So if you've been thinking about it, I encourage you to try them out. Knitting with blackthorn needles feels like knitting with the lead from inside a number two pencil, except that it's incredibly strong. So the texture of the needle and the color are very much like pencil lead. They almost seemed ridged. These needles are not perfectly smooth, and they're not perfectly round. Mine even have some flattened out portions and some imperfections. On the back of the package, it says, "Feels like wood, knits like steel," or something like that. And they are very strong and rigid. When I compare them to the Knitter's Pride Dreams, there's no contest. I haven't broken a needle yet, but it feels like one of those dreams could snap in my fingers at any moment. So I don't have high hopes for them, but they are very pretty. In a turquoise color, it seems like the wood is dyed or stained a beautiful turquoise color. They have nice tips on them. They're not super sharp. Neither one of these needles is super sharp. And they're both very pleasant to knit with, but I do find that these blackthorn needles are superior. I like them better than anything I've tried so far to knit with socks. I like that they're not slippery at all, so the needle does not threaten to slide out of my stitches. I feel like my stitches are a little bit tighter as a result, and yet the needles don't snag on the yarn either. So it seems like the best of all worlds with those. So I will continue to knit this Collywobbles pattern. I think it will look spectacular with the variegated yarn and the patterning on the Collywobbles socks, and I'll keep listeners posted. I've been cooking with mushrooms this month and having a great time talking about mushroom recipes on our hashtag Power Pantry thread. At the farmer's market this week, I visited Warren, the vendor of Woods Fresh at our local farmer's market, to purchase some additional shiitakes and also a new variety of mushroom that I've never tried. The shiitakes will go with some store-bought mushrooms into a savory mushroom bread pudding that I plan to make today. The weather is a bit cooler. It's finally raining and it's kind of dreary. So I think this is the perfect kind of thing to make today. I've posted 3 different recipes, and what I eventually make for this bread pudding will probably be drawing from each of those recipes in some way and coming up with my own concoction. The new mushroom is called a lion's mane mushroom. It's a variety I've never tasted before. I've never even seen it before. And Warren said that this is the type of mushroom that's sometimes used as a substitute for fish or crab when vegans want to have something with that kind of meatiness, and you can shred it and make it into a little type of crab cake. I don't know how I will prepare this yet, and there's not too much information online. So if you have any suggestions, I would like to hear them. And I will probably do that early in the week because I want to use this at its peak freshness. Which brings me to some advice I sought from Warren when I visited him at his stall. I had received a question from RSR instructor. She asked 2 questions: how to store mushrooms, what's the best way, and also a question about the shelf life and how to know if they are not at their prime. The way Warren suggested storing mushrooms is in the paper bag in which he packages them when he sells them to you. He has little paper lunch bags. It's labeled with the type of mushroom. He said just keep it in the bag, put it in a cold section of your refrigerator. It doesn't have to be a crisper drawer. And it will stay fresh for a number of days. When I buy store-bought mushrooms, I also use a variety of this method or a variation on this method to keep them fresh. If I open the package and I use some mushrooms, but I'm going to store others, then I usually take a clean paper towel, a clean dry paper towel. I wrap up the remainder of the mushrooms and I put that paper towel back in the plastic container in which they were sold. I don't rewrap with plastic wrap. I just keep the mushrooms in that paper wrapping. And they do maintain their freshness for a few more days. The enemy of mushroom freshness is the slime factor. Mushrooms tend to get slimy on the outside when they are going bad. And often this will happen to the stem first before the mushroom cap. So sometimes I remove the stems and put them in the freezer before I store the mushrooms, and that seems to extend their storage life a little bit longer. I have a big freezer bag full of these mushroom stems, and I do plan to use them to make a stock. I've linked to some advice for making a mushroom stock in the show notes. And this author recommends keeping 2 freezer bags, one for a regular vegetable stock and one for a mushroom stock. I think that's a pretty good tip. I was pretty excited about cooking with mushrooms this month because one of my favorite dishes is a tofu spaghetti that Samuel makes with mushrooms and tofu. And I was hoping that this being hashtag Power Pantry Mushrooms Month, that I could convince him to make it because his version always comes out more tasty than mine. Not only did he make this dish and make a big quantity so we were able to have it for a few meals and freeze some of the sauce, he agreed to be interviewed on the podcast about making this dish. A word of caution before you listen, we are dining as we have this discussion, and we are pretty animated eaters, so there is some noise of knives and forks against the plate and also our wine glasses at the table it's authentic. It's the authentic sound of us sharing a meal and conversation. But if you are listening on earbuds, you might want to take that into account before you listen to the interview. To Samuel's fabulous tofu spaghetti.
All right. Well, thanks for the compliment.
Hashtag Power Pantry during the month of September is all about mushrooms. And you very generously made some tofu spaghetti for us. So,
well, this recipe has a pound of mushrooms.
And a pound of tofu.
And a pound of tofu. However, I would suggest probably starting out with a half pound. Whatever's in those boxes, I think it's one. It's a 1 pound container, but start with a half, because tofu is not digested very easily.
So, really?
So a lot of
because of the soy.
Yeah, the soy. Yeah. So it's beans. You know, you're eating a pound of beans there. So.
Well, I want to start with what this tastes like and what it looks like.
Oh.
So we have some thin spaghetti. This is whole wheat spaghetti from Barilla Pasta with your mushroom tofu. I think it's like a ragu. It's very thick.
Yeah.
It looks like a meat sauce. If you were to see it without knowing it was tofu, it looks to me like a meat sauce. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah. It doesn't run.
No.
It sits right up on top.
It sits on top.
Yeah, it does.
And I put just a lot of grated Parmesan cheese over the top of it. So what about the history of this dish?
The history, well, I had gone back for my second bachelor's degree, and my major was philosophy, and it seemed like the philosophy students would always get together wherever. It's like on a street corner. We'd stand on the street corner and talk, and talk Sartre and Heidegger and smoke cigarettes and
like philosophy majors should.
Like we should. And so then it was always okay. So now where do we go? And for a while we were going up to the dorm and hanging out in the dorm and doing things probably that we shouldn't have been doing in the dorm. And I said, well, this is really kind of silly. I have a house that's a mile away from campus. Why don't we just go there? So we did. And then I just come up with this idea that I would make spaghetti every Thursday night. So we decided, all right, so every Thursday night, you know, after class, we're going to do this. And so we needed a clever name, as philosophy majors do, come up with clever names for everything. And it was, if I remember this correctly, it was Samuel's late night smart tofu spaghetti party. And I don't know, like around 11 o'clock, so like after class, I would like run to the supermarket and get my stuff. Because, you know, you always had to get your tofu fresh, you know, every week. So you couldn't, you know, buy it ahead of time, or shouldn't anyway. So I would run there and get all my supplies and come home and start cooking. And their deal was that they were to bring the wine.
And the cigarettes.
And wine and the cigarettes, yes. Yeah, and whatever else they wanted to bring.
Well, we are drinking a double bottle in expensive wine in honor of those college days.
Vinyls. They'd stop by with their vinyl records, and they'd come, you know, come. And some people bring, you know, CDs
vinyl
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been that long ago, you know, that I put my
So they wouldn't help with the cooking?
Hmm? No.
Do all the cooking.
I would do all the cooking.
And you made pretty much this quantity, a full box of spaghetti, and then... Okay.
Yeah, average like 6, 8 people, sometimes 10. Depends.
If there were more people, they would just get less.
Yeah, pretty much it.
And so why were you going for a tofu, like a vegetarian dish?
Well, there's some in the group, didn't eat meat. So the best compromise I could come up with was, okay, look, I can make a mean tofu mushroom, soy dish that just will rock. Now, of course...
That will make women fall in love with you.
We won't talk about that. So
it's less expensive than buying meat, though.
Well,
too.
Yeah, it was. But, I mean, it wasn't a strict vegan either because, you know, I would use cheese. But, of course, you know...
And butter.
Yeah, right. Well, I actually didn't tell them I had a lot of butter in there.
You didn't tell them about
Mm-mm.
the butter?
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. So you knew how to make this before you started making it for them. Is this from your days when you were living vegetarian, vegan?
You know,
or did
I
you just
I kind of don't
idea?
I kind of don't remember it then. I think I created it specifically for that event. I'm pretty sure of that.
This Thursday night tofu spaghetti dinners was a tradition for a couple of years here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
3 semesters, actually.
3 semesters of philosophy talk and tofu spaghetti.
In fact, I still have the book. We had a little blank book to write in.
You still have that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'll have to take a picture.
And it would lay on the table, and we would pass it around and write.
Hmm.
Write different notes in it about... our experiences at the Samuel's late night smart tofu.
Yeah, I can't.
What was it?
I don't know. Let's talk about the taste.
Okay, yeah. What I wanted was an umami thing. I wanted a smoky, burnt, dark, deep flavor. And I had to start with the mushrooms and the butter.
Okay. Well, I'm an omnivore. I've only had a very, very, very short vegetarian stint for just a few months when I was a student abroad.
Mm.
Because mad cow was... That was like the craze right then.
Wow.
So when I taste this, I taste the same depth of flavor and meatiness that I get from a meat dish.
Yeah, this time I used miso.
You used the miso.
Yeah. As an experiment, I didn't know what, it does, and I think it is a little deeper in its flavor.
Really
but
good depth of flavor, and in the back of the mouth, there's like a tang.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
It's also partly from the tomato paste. I think there would be some of that umami with the mushrooms and the brown tofu and the tomato paste, just because you're cooking it for a long time and some of that browns. You get that caramelization. Some of the umami is coming from that, but I think the addition of this miso is really something.
Well, it's really important to have the tofu as crumbly as you can possibly get it. You have to use extra firm.
Okay.
Tofu.
So extra firm tofu.
Extra firm tofu, and you know you squeeze as much water out of it as you can because this has to. Saute or brown.
And you do it in a cast iron pan.
Brown in a cast iron pan. Of course, that's the second step. But I just wanted to talk about the tofu having to have lots of surface.
Oh, okay.
The more broken up it is, it's kind of like the difference between a hamburger and ground beef in a pan, you know, that you scramble up.
Right, because the hamburger will only have the... That Maillard
on the outside.
On the outside.
You're right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I start with butter, half a stick of butter, and a pound of...
Half a stick.
Yeah, and a pound of mushrooms. Sorry.
Okay, but this is making 8 servings.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right, yeah. So then after the mushrooms are really nice and brown, I pushed them all to the side. I'm around the outside of the cast iron pan and put a little bit of butter in the center again. It depends. If I need it, I might have to put a little bit more in the center, depending on how much the mushrooms absorb. Okay, and that's where I put my clove of garlic, right there in the center of this mushroom, in the center of the mushrooms that were just sautéed. So then, you know...
Minced clove of garlic.
Yes, minced.
Okay.
Chopped very fine. Okay. And bring it up until it's almost clear. Not you don't want to burn the garlic.
You don't want to get a brown.
You want to burn it. So then, of course, I mix it all together. Take that out. Put that in a bowl. And immediately start the tofu. Put the tofu in that so that takes the longest, and that's rather
so you use one cast iron pan, let the mushrooms cook. The last phase is to add the garlic so you don't overcook that,
right?
Then you transfer all that just to a dish and hold it on the side, and right. Then you use the same pan for your tofu, and it takes how long does it take for you?
Oh, I didn't know the tofu.
From adding the tofu to the pan to finishing.
At least 20 minutes of stirring back and forth. And you have to keep scraping it off the bottom of the pan.
So you kind of let it brown.
Yeah, let it brown, scrape it off, and turn it over again and keep doing that. Kind of like
you know
with scrambled eggs. Hmm?
How do you know when you're done?
Well, when most of it is sort of a medium brown. And as it starts to get toward the end there, that's where you can put... you can put your soy based either soy sauce or miso, one of the two. Be very careful with the miso though. Like I would go like a teaspoon and see how that is. You can add the teaspoon to the mushrooms, and you can add it to the tofu as you're doing that, or you can add it to the sauce when it's finally simmering. So do it sparingly though, a little bit at a time, you know, as you go. But you can put it, you can do it to the mushroom. Now this particular time I put a good teaspoon, maybe even tablespoon, I don't know, somewhere between teaspoon and tablespoon in the mushrooms. So the mushrooms were really, really, really strong. Yeah. But the thing is, when you put it in a sauce, it eventually all comes off into the sauce anyway. So it's not going to stick to the, you know.
I think if someone has a soy allergy, I think that aged balsamic can also work. I have made my own variation of this recipe, although mine is never as good. I think because I don't use as much butter as you do. But... some aged balsamic also gives it makes the color of the sauce darker, and it adds that umami. All right, so let's talk about
now the
mushrooms is done, the tofu's done, and now you add tomato product.
Now you can put the mushrooms back in, and you add whatever. I don't know what size or how many ounces those little cans are of tomato paste.
Those little cans of tomato paste.
Get yourself 3 cans of organic tomato paste. Could either be those 3 cans like that, or it could just be a larger can that equals the same amount. But put all those in, and then probably I'd start out with 1 can of water, see how that goes for a little while. And if it seems like it's just too stiff, then add another can of water. And then you could probably add up to 3-4 cans of water. It depends on how liquid you want this sauce to be, you know. But I leave it pretty stiff, like you say, like the ragu thing. So then now you've got it all in one container. And again, in those 3 different steps, you can add your soy sauce or your miso, whichever you want. Extra dark, of course, organic miso. There's lots of varieties of miso. You could you know, taste different ones, see which ones you like. And miso, of course, is really, really healthy, and it's really good gut biology or bacteria, whatever.
Oh, it's like probiotics.
Yeah, very, really, really good. So really good, you know, kind of like kombucha, that type of thing. Uh-huh. Okay, so now it's all in one dish. So what I do is your favorite herbs, your favorite Italian herbs, you know, whatever you have to put in there.
All right, use some. What do you use? Some basil, parsley, oregano.
Maybe a little rosemary.
Do you put salt in? Or no?
I put a little salt. Going back to the mushrooms, I do put a little salt on the mushrooms to taste, yeah.
Well, the salt, when you cook mushrooms, the salt helps take the water out of the mushrooms. And you want the water out so you have that concentrated flavor.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, be careful with all these numbers, you know, add to taste. But those are just generally the amounts that I use. Then, you know, put those herbs all together in a nice mortar and pestle and, you know, get it down to powder if you can, you know, and throw it in there. And then just keep stirring and be careful. Again, we're still in the same pot now.
Right, same so you pan. All that in same one big pan. Just keep it at a really low temperature. You can just keep that cooking until all your guests are there. Just cooking.
You can make it.
Cooking,
you can make it like at noon and leave it there all day if you want. It'll keep absorbing, and this is the thing. It will keep absorbing things. You know, like your soy sauce or your miso, it will increase in flavor the longer it's in the pan. So,
well, I know. Okay, so we're full disclosure. We're eating leftovers because you originally made this on Wednesday.
Made a lot,
and it's much. It's always much better later than it is. I mean, of course, it's good that day because you make it and the house smells like it. Oh my god, it's so good, tofu spaghetti. But then, really, the better version of it is the leftover version. Because those flavors soak into the tofu and it just has a more concentrated flavor, I think. So this, if you were cooking, you know, for a smaller number of people, this would be a great candidate for freezing.
Mm.
And then you would have a great sauce for future meals.
Yeah, it's a sauce you want to keep because, you know, you should only make the amount of noodles you need for
The pasta fresh.
Yeah, right. But
I topped it tonight with Parmesan cheese, but the first time I had it, you actually topped it with grated Swiss cheese.
I know. And I'm not really sure how I ended up using Swiss cheese because it's an odd choice, but it seemed to be a big hit. It might have, you know what? It's a possibility. It might have been a mistake the first night I made it for my friends.
You didn't have anything else. You were like, oh, shit.
I don't know what happened, but I think that might have, you know, now that I think about that, I think I had to keep doing it because it was a hit and everybody loved it. It usually wasn't midnight until we were eating. So here we are eating spaghetti at midnight and loving every bite of it. And, of course, people would wander out and, like, leave by 2:30, 3 o'clock. You know, back to campus.
Oh, the undergrad days.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be something happy about spending all that money. It was at this very table, in this very room, that I did that. Actually, right here.
Yep. It's still good.
Okay. Sometimes people would migrate to the sofa after eating because it was so good. Or they, you know, depends on how much they ate, you know. But if you eat a lot,
it is very filling.
It stops you. It stops you.
You never served it with a salad or anything.
No salad. No.
And so we're gonna create just your basic description of the recipe is here in audio form, but we will include a list of ingredients if people want to create this at home. And it's kind of like, here are the ingredients, make it to taste. That's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like it with the Parmesan. or any, you know, any very, very strong or sharp cheese would probably be really
good. It needs something strong to stand up to that taste.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like to say in conclusion?
In conclusion. No. Well, you know, I miss that. You know, maybe making this dish on occasion, it's nostalgic. I suppose in the kitchen, you know, doing this, because the thing, you know, when you're making for a group of people and they're not here yet, and of course I lived alone at the time. I was single, and so I'm in the kitchen and I got my music cranked. And you know, there's this expectation. Not only is the smell of the, you know, the sauce in the air, but it's this expectation that, you know, a bunch of people are coming over and we're gonna talk until we're mad in the face. You know, we're gonna have a great time. So there's that expectation.
It's always good to have something to look forward to. That sense of anticipation is part of the thing.
Right.
It's not just the night happening. It's also that sense of.
Well, the other thing too was Thursday night at the particular college that I went to. Thursday night was the big party night.
All right.
Wasn't very many Friday classes, and hardly anyone went to Friday classes anyway. But Thursday night was a big party night, so a lot of sororities and fraternities were having their thing. And that was our thing, because we weren't part of it. Nobody was part of that. I mean, I was probably too old to join a fraternity. But that ended up to be our fraternity, you know, our thing. Some of the same people were involved in the Lit magazine that we put together. And so some of that talk would spill over and we would talk about the pieces that we were writing or a new poem or a short story or something. And if you had just been working on something, you'd bring that, you know. So almost everybody, too, was not only, they were double majors, not only philosophy majors, but also English majors. So English and philosophy majors, double majors, and so that was kind of the climate of the night. It's like, you know, we're better because we're smaller. It's a smaller group. We're more intelligent.
We're elite,
and we're having spaghetti at midnight, and they're not.
They're not. Clearly, they're just drinking.
Clearly not having the fun and excitement that we were having. Yeah.
All right. Well. Here's to community.
Here's to that.
And tofu spaghetti.
And bachelor degrees.
Thanks, Samuel.
You're welcome. I'm honored.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview and this episode. I believe I mentioned earlier that you heard knives and forks on the plate, but we eat our spaghetti with forks and spoons, as people should. And in honor of Samuel's appearance on this episode, I have used Bovine Social Club's version of So Eat. The music and lyrics are by Samuel, and this is the recording that's available on Bovine Social Club's first album. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass. Furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature. A sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature. A sweet thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a
You better tell your face to smile. Jump in a river naked.